Just Insanity! Welcome to this episode of our podcast. Today, we'll be joined by the ever-colorful Kevin Berman. We'll be talking about compensation as it relates to pro sports in regards to the athletes and the coaches. How about that, Redlegs fans? What do you say we get this thing started? I just sold out to the perfect condition. Coming alive!
White chocolate reporting for duty. I'm ready to rock and roll, baby. Red, white, and blue.
Hey, are you wearing that for Bobby Hurley?
Bobby Hurley got short stroked by the damn Lakers, and he didn't even try to negotiate. He's an idiot.
Is he?
Yeah, well, he gave up $70 million for $50 million. Who does that? Yeah, I want to live in Storr, Connecticut versus Bel Air, California, over $20 million. Like, really? I would have negotiated that to a one-year deal with the Lakers and then signed a max deal after that. He was an absolute wuss for what he did.
I can't blame him for what he did because I don't know. I would sacrifice $20 million if I already had $50 rather than live in California. And that's a God's honest truth.
I mean, I don't even understand why he took the meeting. He knew it was on the table. You have to. You have to know what was on the table. Like, what do you think? They had a conversation like ballpark, you know, comp, and like, what do you think? They just surprised him with it when he got there?
Well, now you're bringing up a good point. I don't know why you take the meeting and then turn it down.
Yeah, you do it. You do it because you want to be a media whore. And to be quite honest with you, based on, I don't know if you guys paid attention to the UConn's men's Twitter, but like based on how quickly they jumped on it, like, I feel like it was just a media ruse for UConn publicity.
Hey, it was a good play if that's the case.
Hey, Ari Gold.
Selling heat. Heat's the best thing you got to sell. That's what UConn did, is they sold heat.
I don't know if they sold anything. They capitalized off of a really shitty...
Okay, they capitalized on the heat. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't even understand their angle, but, like, it was just... It's just a bizarre situation. Like, you usually won't see the coaches of that caliber taking in-person meetings in LA and not actually taking the job. Like, there's something going on behind the scenes we don't know about, and God bless him. But ironically, he's got a $50 million contract with UConn, and he's still not even the highest paid college coach. He's making $3 million less a year than Bill Self.
I think what happened is he met LeBron in person and then decided, yeah, I'm going to stay out of this mess. I'll stick with the college kids.
Not true. He's been a coach on Team USA with LeBron. He knows LeBron.
Actually, you can't really say that about college kids anymore, thanks to all the NIL deals.
And NIL is an interesting – I heard an interesting position on it actually from an accountant earlier this week.
You know one of those?
I do. I know an accountant in that space. And funny enough, like, you know, over the next 5-10 years with this NIL process, it's going to become marginal for these athletes. It's a whole, you know, novelty right now, but there's very few that are going to make actual money. Because at the end of the day, the returns on investment that these, you know, outside boosters are putting into these colleges is not there. No pun intended on Ari Gold. But you think Lloyd's Chevy dealership there in Lawrence, Kansas is going to make $600K in incremental revenue just because they have a banner on the court? Like, no.
No, they just want a winner that badly.
Well, you know, like, arguably, NIL money is actually doing the opposite. It's watering teams down. It's not concentrating teams within 5, 6, 7 teams. I think, to your point, the tier 2 and tier 3 teams want winners that bad, not the blue bloods.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
We'll see, but at the end of the day, as a result of the most recent court battle the NCAA lost, it would appear that players will be getting paid to play as employees in the very near future.
Theoretically, that's what should have happened versus NIL.
WNBA can't even regulate the aces.
Of course, you got to go to the WNBA real quick.
Cheaters never prosper.
The WNBA is a joke. So here's a funny anecdotal quip here.
As in ha ha or interesting?
It's interesting and kind of ha ha in my opinion. the average salary cap for a WNBA team is, take a guess.
Salary cap,
total salary count for each individual WNBA team.
It can't be more than a few million.
1.5 million.
1.3 million, as a matter of fact. Very close. The average NIL for a blue chip basketball program, we're talking Kentucky, Michigan State, Kansas, North Carolina, Florida, UCLA. How much?
We're sticking with basketball?
4X. Four times that. $5 million average.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, in the case of the Aces, they're getting $100,000 a player per
year. So that was a local business who came in and said, hey, I'm going to help supplement your shit salaries with $100,000. And it's a blanket endorsement just per capita broken up across the team. I don't see a problem with that. I don't know why the WNBA does, mostly because the WNBA is quite trying to control the narrative of we're underpaid. I feel like the WNBA is the reverse of DEI, believe it or not. I feel like they're trying to get people to feel bad for the players because they're marginalized. And they tune in, and then the league's going to get rich. And then eventually when the league can justify it, they'll start, marginally jacking up the salaries. But
well, in all honesty, on the men's side with the players' unions, isn't it how it works, is that the player's salaries are, say, 40, 50, 60% of total revenue, league revenue?
Okay, well, let's do that math then. So how many teams you got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 teams, okay? They operated at a net $25 million loss. They're projected to operate actually at a net $35 million loss this year based on increased expenses such as charter airplanes. So let's take $35 million and let's take that loss. John, you've got an accounting background. Let's chop that up across 13 teams. What is 35 divided by 13 roughly, John?
I don't know, but where you're going is pay to play.
Where we're going is if you want the argument to be on the NBA side that we're sharing profits and that's the players union position, which is absolutely correct. And I think they do a great job of rev share given the size of their contracts. On the women's side, they owe money. They should each be paying to play in that league, given it operates at a net loss.
Well, isn't that how they come up with the salary caps for the three major leagues, NFL, MLB, and NBA?
It's based on total income and rev share. Exactly. That's exactly how it is. It's literally a pay to play scheme that's offset and subsidized by some other league, mostly men's leagues. And I'm not trying to sound misogynistic, but those are facts. The NBA subsidizes the WNBA. Major League Soccer subsidizes the Women's Pro Soccer League.
So we're comparing apples to oranges, but at the end of the day, they're making an investment in the league until such time it gets to the proportion of some of the leagues to which we're comparing it.
Okay, well, while we're on basketball and we're talking about compensation, who's worth, if you think anyone, who's worthwhile or who would you pick to be the first $100 million a year NBA player?
Well, first off, I'm a little stressed out from that conversation. I'm going to drink a lovely Nevada Brewworks beer coming at you here from Las Vegas. Support my people over at Nevada Brewworks when you come to town. Jason Effin Tatum is the answer to that question.
I believe that's what you said earlier today, Dad.
Let's actually, for the sake of the argument, let me throw this out there.
You can say that with a straight face, knowing he's a former Duke player?
I absolutely can. He has put the work in. As a matter of fact, he's not only a great player, he's a great role model. He brings his kid everywhere. I love the fact that he's bringing Deuce everywhere. That's awesome.
Brown is a stud, too.
He got paid, man. He got paid, too. But Jason Tatum, he's the real effing deal.
Well, he gets paid, is it after this year?
Next year, 26.
Okay.
But I think they'll probably try to extend him early because of the fact that they're going to get a discount if they do, and he's got upside just locking something in. But so to answer your question, who deserves it? It's Tatum. Who's going to be the $100 million man? That's a great – we're probably – I think it's going to be 5, 7, maybe even 10 years before we're seeing $100 million contract.
According to the article in the Wall Street Journal, it will be Luka.
Well, I'm not so sure about that based on Luka's piss poor performance in the finals.
I was going to say the Joker.
His whiny ass mentality his stock went significantly down, unless Mark Cuban just is oblivious to all this sitting courtside. But if you guys have been watching this series, he's got to grow up.
Echoing what Clayton said, we're not an NBA family per se, so we're talking a limited sample.
So if we're not talking NBA, then what are we talking, NFL or MLB? I mean, listen, I'm here all day, baby.
Hey, NFL, you bring up a good one. NFL, if I'm not mistaken, Trevor Lawrence got a big contract this week. Currently the highest paid quarterback in the league, beats out Joe Burrow. If you're talking a $200 million quarterback, guaranteed money, tell me the three currently in the NFL that you would pay that kind of money.
I think it's an extreme misnomer. I think you have to look at the global professional landscape of contracts to even consider his contract. He is the 25th or 25th highest paid contract of all time. He's not even a top 10 contract. So it may seem ridiculous. There's much bigger contracts in front of him.
Quarterback?
Yes, Mahomes specifically. Mahomes has a $450 million contract. Now that burns over 10 years, but Mahomes got a bigger contract than Trevor Lawrence by 2x, almost. Well, 1.75.
Well, I think that's why we said guaranteed, though, is because that guaranteed number seems to be going up a lot quicker in these contracts than the overall value through the life of the contract. That's the one that's the shocker, which, you know, the MLB, it's essentially guaranteed. The NFL has never been, it's only been a certain percentage of the overall contract's been guaranteed money. So it's, I mean, that's a big nut. Like, look at Carson Wentz. He got $100 million guaranteed, and then what did they get out of that?
Jacksonville is a top 10 franchise in terms of total cap, right? But they just completely blew their wad with Trevor Lawrence because now they're non-flexible when it comes to remaining cap space. I think they're sitting at a little under $20 million of cap space when everybody in front of them is sitting anywhere from 30 to 45 mil of cap space. Do you really think that this is that great of a contract in the light of, you know, what's to come most likely with Dak and with Lamar after this?
Well, again, I think you bring up a whole nother subject with them, but if we're just strictly talking, I've got to guarantee someone $200 million. There are other quarterbacks I would guarantee it to, such as Mahomes, maybe Allen, before I'd ever think about doing it with Trevor Lawrence.
Not if you're the Jaguars. So look at their recent past. I mean, they've had Gardner Minshew as a bargain basement backup. I mean, who have the Jaguars, like just break them down as a squad. Who have they ever had who's been that boy from the Southeast, who's got that draw into the stadium, who's got that stature, who's got, frankly, the ability to take them into the playoffs, which he has consistently done? Like, I would counter with, like, he's done his job for Jacksonville. He plays for Jacksonville at the end of the day.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that angle. But for argument's sake, let's say for this question, you don't know what team it is, what situation you're in. Someone held a gun to your head. You got a guarantee $200 million. You got to pick three quarterbacks. What are your three?
I would take Brady right out of retirement, man. I still trust Brady more than I do anyone in this damn league. But obviously, Mahomes has got to be the top of that list. He's been the most proven and consistent resilient quarterback. I mean, John, I know who your number two is.
Apparently not, because I already said my number two.
Who?
Allen.
That's who I was going to guess. Number three, I'm guessing, will be Joe Burrow.
That's an injury risk.
I don't know if I have a number three, but if I had to take a third, I would take Burrow, knowing he's an injury risk, which is why I don't know if I have a number three, because at the end of the day, Lamar Jackson, running quarterback, injury risk every year, can't win the big playoff game. Hurts, running quarterback, injury risk. He's out. So, I mean, how many quarterbacks do I have left?
You don't have a lot. You've got Mahomes. You got, like, this is the five you have to pick from: Mahomes, Jackson, Burrow, Allen, and Herbert. Those are the five you have to pick from. And ironically, not one of them is named dude down in Jacksonville.
Nope.
And it's funny because we're struggling to come up with a third. Yet had you asked this question about quarterbacks 5 to 10 years ago, you'd be struggling to weed out two guys. back when you had Manning and Breeze and Brady and Rodgers and all these guys in their prime, Matthew Stafford. Now it's going the other direction.
Well, I think it's because the sanctity of the position has diminished greatly. It's gone from, you know, a under center, you know, mechanics driven role and leadership role on the team to showtime, right? Like all these quarterbacks are all, like even Mahomes, like he lacks significant amounts of fundamentals when it comes to being a quarterback. I mean, just the way he runs around throwing shovel passes across his body while he's getting drilled and running out of bounds, and he's running Tom and Jerry plays to end, you know, to his final plays in the Super Bowl. Like these are not fundamentally sound days. And we talked about this with baseball a couple podcasts back, right? Not to conflate subjects, but all these professional sports are going so much further away from fundamentals. It's all about that showtime circus act. And these guys are all showtime circus act. They don't stack up all time except for maybe Mahomes, and only because of Super Bowl rings.
You must have read Tom Brady's recent article where he said he felt badly for today's quarterbacks because they're not the field generals that were once in the quarterback role. A lot of the coaches are making the decisions for them, as opposed to them making the decisions on the field, going back to because of the coaching. And I'll go one step further, not just with the quarterbacks, but with the entire team. I mean, you don't have much of a training camp. When you do have a training camp, if there's a contract issue, they hold out. They practice less than they used to. I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't practice as much, you're not going to be as fundamentally sound.
I think Brady was the last of the great quarterbacks. I think from here, they're all circus acts. Caleb Williams included.
Yeah, you could have put Rodgers into that conversation as being one of the last of great quarterbacks, but he's turned into a bit of a prima donna diva, so that's right out the window.
Rodgers gets handicapped just merely based on, to your point, his conduct. He is an absolute horrendous teammate, and what he's doing with the Jets right now is just par for the course, right? Just not showing up to mandatory OTAs, just absolutely – just torching the squad after not showing up for the season with an injury last year. I mean, Rodgers is going to get knocked out of the league this year again. I mean, nobody likes him.
He needs to take some mushrooms and go sit down underneath a Joshua tree and think about life.
His own family doesn't even like him. He doesn't talk to his family. Like, you know, he goes through women like, you know, he thinks he's Hugh Hefner. Listen, do I respect Aaron Rodgers' game, you know, circa 2005 to 2015, absolutely. He used to destroy Chicago. He used to run through the NFC North and the NFC and the AFC for that matter. But to be honest with you, how many rings does that guy have?
Uno.
Right? Over 20 years? How many rings does Mahomes have over 6 years? So, like,
they never could get past San Francisco in recent years. Shanahan had the Packers' freaking number in the playoffs.
I'll throw a sleeper quarterback in that we didn't discuss now that we're talking about Rodgers, is Jordan Love. I'm throwing Jordan Love in because I was impressed with Jordan Love's field general ability. He was playing with an absolute dog shit squad last season.
Well, their wide receiving core was not strong at all.
Well, that's the front office's fault. And that's continued to be a problem, and it's part of the reason why Rodgers never got another ring. I'm not saying it's the whole problem, but it's a part of the problem. If you don't give the guy weapons and he's thrown to the widows and orphans and the white guys from the practice squad, you can only get so far at a certain point when you're trying to win a freaking Super Bowl.
Let me just put it in context. With that shit team he had, that shit – like the entire O-line was injured half the year. He was the number one quarterback in terms of big-time throws, number two in terms of passing touchdowns, and top five in total passing yards. So you kind of got to talk about Jordan Love if you're going to talk about top three, top five statistically.
Especially when you consider he's early on in his career and how much longer quarterbacks play now that they don't get hit as much.
Talk about interesting topics. Why don't you turn around and show us your tattoo?
You see it?
Put it up a little bit.
I see it. I'm just trying to figure out what it might be.
I don't think he knows. It was a 3 a.m. thing, I think. And
4 a.m. at Planet Hollywood. But, you know, that's another story.
You know, they say nothing good happens after midnight.
They also say don't kiss and tell, John. It's my secret.
Oh, All right. Well, we did the NBA and the NFL. How about we shift to the MLB?
Oh, dear Lord.
I did some preliminary research to look up contract values to kind of frame this question up. So if the average annual salary for the top 10 players or the top 10 MLB players is $36.7 million, which five players off this list is worth that much money on an annual basis? Now, there's actually going to be 11 names here, but that's because you're talking about the way they recognized or defined annual average value. But number one is Ohtani, two is Scherzer, three Verlander, four Jacob DeGrom, five Aaron Judge, six Anthony Rendon, which we know where he sits. That's a train wreck. Seven is Mike Trout, eight Gerrit Cole, nine Patrick Corbin, 10 Nolan Arenado, and 11 Corey Seager. Which of those five are you picking that you're willing to pay $36.7 million a year?
Well, I think your list is a bit off there, my man. You missed Trout. You missed Judge.
No, Judge and Trout are both on there. I think your beer's getting to you.
Did I miss it?
Yeah, your brewery must make some strong shit there, dude.
Drink some water.
Did you say Gerrit Cole?
Yep, he's on there.
All right, perfect. Yeah, well, like, so first off, that top 25 list I was mentioning of total pro athletes, out of that top 25 list, 17 out of 25 are baseball players.
Doesn't surprise me.
Baseball is by far the most lucrative sport in terms of contract value and ability to generate contract value from players.
While I agree with you, let's be fair, they also play the most games.
They do play the most games. However, in some cases, when you have a pitcher on that list, they don't play a lot of games. So you've got to so one thing I've always found interesting with baseball is that there's no disparity or handicapping between a pitcher who may make an appearance in 15 to 20 games versus a position player who may make a appearance in 140 games.
Well, but part of that is if you look at the I don't know if this is the right term, physiology of it, the way in which you throw a baseball is unnatural for the human body. And when you're a pitcher and you're trying to put that much spin rate on the ball, that much torque's going on your elbow and your shoulder, and you're trying to throw 100 miles an hour for 100 pitches a game, plus your warm-ups before each inning, your warm-up before the game, the fielders aren't as putting much stress on the most important part of your body to play the game of baseball, which is your arm. So I think there could be – that could be a counterbalance or considered as somewhat of a counterbalance, but I still get your point.
I've heard that argument before, that retort. Translate that now to the NFL. The same can be said for a quarterback who takes a much more significant pounding on a game-by-game basis. Granted, they don't play as many. Imagine if a football team had a rotation of three quarterbacks, okay? Theoretically, right? Just bear with me. So that would mean that each quarterback would play six games. Do you think that those quarterbacks would be making as much as those receivers in the NFL? Hell no. I think they would be prorated. I think if you saw that in the NFL, you'd be seeing contracts of like 15 to 20 mil per quarterback, three on the roster. I think the MLB is an absolute anomaly when it comes to the disparity between a pitcher and a position player. And that's never talked about. I don't understand why people don't talk about that.
Well, based on what you just said, then I don't want to see any pitchers in your top five.
I was about to say something similar. I was going to say, well, I'm going to go with at least three of his top five are position players.
The one that's on there that obviously was the top of your list, it's the top of any list because by far, aside from Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, is the most significant sporting contract ever. Ohtani and the Dodgers did funny math on a 10-year deal and deferred how much of that? Like 580 or 600 and something million of that?
The beauty of that is everybody thinks it's for tax purposes, but you still have to pay taxes in the jurisdiction in which you earned the money. So doesn't matter when he gets the money, he's paying California taxes.
Yeah, he is going to pay California taxes, but I think he probably just did it because he knew that he needed to hide it from his manager who was gambling it all.
So give us your five, white chocolate.
Top five?
Top five.
I'll say Judge. Judge has the sweetest contract of anyone, I think, because specifically knowing details of Judge's contract, he's got an out after 4 years. Otani's not even in my top five, so I'm moving on from there. I think Trout's got a pretty sweet deal, especially given he signed it right before he got severely injured. But based on the market, another one I've been tracking for a minute here from this year is Bobby Wilt Jr., who hit himself into a big contract. I'm going to say Strasburg. You know Strasburg on that list?
No, Strasburg's retired, dude.
I know he's retired, but he's still getting paid, which is the best part. Guaranteed.
He was on the list. I pulled him off because he's retired.
Well, that's right. He's still getting paid, though. He structured a six-year deal for $45 million. He's been out of the game for a year and a half.
Fair point.
I'll give you one. Another one, similar to Kansas City, the next layer down right under Wilt will be your homeboy, Joey Votto. I'll give Joey the nod.
Oh, he got paid off.
Yeah.
He got paid a couple million to walk.
It's saying through 2026, so he's still getting paid.
All right, what you got, Big Papa?
Well, I am going to start with Judge. He's putting up the numbers. I am not taking the same approach as White Chocolate there. I'm just going on guys in the moment that I would pay $35 million, $36.7 million a year. And as of today, in addition to Judge, I would do Otani because he's a draw. And I'm going to have to throw in Juan Soto.
He's about to get paid, man. He's going to have close to a $1 billion contract.
And then if I were to stay with this list, there's no one really that today I'd want to pay that kind of money, but I might be in a good mood and pay Corey Seager that kind of money. He's still putting up some numbers. I can always use a good shortstop because I like to be strong up the middle. And then outside of those four, so I'm just going with the safe pick and Mookie Betts.
Let's go back to Juan Soto for a second. Do you think there's a chance? So like my theory on what's about to happen in New York is they're going to let Judge walk and is out next year, and they're going to pay Soto a shitload of money.
I would keep Soto over Judge because look at the difference in age.
They love him there. Have you guys watched the New York Yankees baseball game on Yes Network lately? The freaking fans love him in the Bronx. Like, he is like a kid from the Bronx. He might as well be Jenny from the block. We'll call him Juan from the block. He is the most beloved Yankees player since Alex Rodriguez.
What's not to love?
All right, I guess it's on me.
Let's hear it.
I'm going to save the one I don't want to say, but I probably need to say for last, and neither of you said it. So I'm going to go with Judge. I'm going to go with Soto. I'm going to go with Mookie Betts because look at his numbers at the plate consistently year in and year out. And not only that, the guy was an all-star outfielder for how long? And now he's probably going to end up being in the all-star game this year as a shortstop. How pissed are you if you're an NL shortstop and Mookie Betts' first year at the position is going to be the starter for the position for the NL? So there's three. You got Soto, Judge, Betts. Then you got, I like Arenado. I don't know. I've always liked him. He's been a solid hitter. Average-wise, power-wise, plays a good third base. And I can't believe I'm going to say this for the fifth one because I don't necessarily like the dude. Yeah, due to his younger years, but with the putting butts in the seats combined with his numbers over the course of his career thus far, freaking Bryce Harper.
I almost brought him up myself. I mean, he's underpaid by 10 to 15 mil a year.
His career batting average is .281, and he's already hit 321 career home runs, 935 RBIs.
And he's a draw, and to be honest with you, when the Phillies make the playoffs, he is intimidating in that play.
I'm going to tell you, fellas, I don't have a glass of water here, and I just threw up in my mouth.
I told you, no one's going to like it. All right, so if we're talking about players and paying them, for argument's sake, we'll say $40 million a year or close to it. Would you rather have that top-tier player, the one guy, and blow your $40 million each year, blow your load on that one guy, that one guy that's top-tier? Or would you rather spread it out amongst three or four players that are average or a little bit below average to try to fill more needs on your roster?
What league?
MLB. And the reason, and I'm going to use this as an example simply because it's the team we talk about the most. Look at the Reds signings this offseason. Montas, Candelario, Nick Martinez, and Emilio Pagan. All three of them added up their salaries, added up this year, I think is going to cost the Reds right around $50 million. Are they providing enough value in return compared to what one guy like a Soto or a Judge provides for the same amount of money?
I mean, so first off, let's just handicap this with small market teams are just not winners. I mean, you've got anomalies over the past, call it quarter of a century here, between Kansas City and St. Louis.
What are the Rays considered? They might not have won the World Series, but they sure as hell has competed deep into the playoffs every year.
Sure, right? But they didn't win the last game of the series. And isn't that what it's about? That's what you're paying the players for.
Fair enough.
Okay, fun fact here. What was the last team to switch? So what was the last team to sweep in the World Series?
Not sure I can answer that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Giants over Detroit. Major market, small market. What was the time before that? Red Sox, 07. Major market, small market. What was the time before that? Bo Sox over Cardinals, major, small. It's a theme here.
Right. So let me reword the question for you then, white chocolate. If you were the general manager of what we are calling a small market team, how would you spend your money?
Pitching. Well, actually, no. Hold on. Let me retract that.
I only play every fifth day.
Let me actually retract. I retract. I would pull a page out of Billy Bean's book. I would be spending money on run production, on base percentage, and defensively speaking, wouldn't necessarily give a shit as much as I do about those two factors, those two data points. And then I would pay one starting pitcher that's a stud, get a bunch of moderately decent, you know, rotation guys, pay one middle reliever really well, and pay one closer really well on the pitching side. And that's how I'd pay the players.
Right.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny in regards to hitting that you say that, because
it's not, I didn't say hitting. I said on base percentage. I don't give a shit if it's a walk or if it's a hit.
I was referring to offense versus defense. How about that? But that's the thing my dad and I have been preaching all along. I don't give a shit about hitting home runs. Doesn't do me any good if you can't get on base and create fucking opportunities.
Correct.
And it doesn't do me any good if you hit a home run and then you strike out the next three times.
It's the Jason Giambi philosophy, right? I think he put up like 30 home runs that year that he left to go to sign with the Red Sox, and then Billy Bean took over, or Billy Bean had to backfill him with what's his name on the A's, but dude had like nerve damage, couldn't even throw the ball, couldn't do shit. Like
Hatterberg.
Yeah, that's right. All he did was get on base, man. That's all he did.
So you would want a bunch of TJ Friedels.
Yes, 110. Yes, I want a bunch of Clayton Stones. I want a bunch of Kevin Burke, guys that were position players that could get on base, that would run through the base, that could produce runs, because you're not going to win runs. So I would do exactly what Billy Bean did. I would sit down and I would statistically project how many runs that I would need to score versus how many runs I would need to defend against just to make the playoffs. That's how I would pay players. And I would allocate that pretty consistently over the roster. I wouldn't really pay people excess money. I mean, in my analogy here with the 2002-2003 A's, I do believe they paid David Justice like $7 million, but that was only because they wanted some sort of a draw to put butts in seats to just kind of get some momentum from a revenue standpoint.
But to your point of paying one really good pitcher, if you look at what the Reds did in 1990, if I'm not mistaken, Jose Rio pitched three games in the World Series. Now, I think it was two because they swept. But he pitched two games out of the four they won.
Speaking of these high-end players,
they need somebody to manage them.
You're the one that brought it to our attention that Bell is tied for 18th with every other manager in the league for their annual salary.
Minimum.
Do you say that, or do you think that all those guys are in that same ballpark or tier of like, they really haven't proven anything to prove their competence at managing an MLB team? Do you think it's just a team saying, hey, we're going to try to save some money to spend on players. Let's just get someone in here that's serviceable and surround them by some like good base coaches and stuff. What do you think the deal with that is? That's shocking to me that there are that many people tied for 18th from David Bell all the way down to number 32 on the manager's list for their annual salary.
All right. So, I mean, you got to handicap the managers who are the real deal in this league, right? Like the Bruce Bochys, Kevin Cash, Bob Melvin, Pat Murphy.
Kevin Cash is on that list. He's tied for 18th.
Listen, I think when it comes down to it, like the funny part about the manager payroll, the manager conundrum, unlike the players, this is not a big market versus small market issue.
Nope.
That's the interesting part of it.
Yeah, because the one that gets paid the most is Council, and that's $8 million a year. I mean, we're paying a reliever $8 million a year that's on IL right now.
Well, compared to basketball, Steve Kerr's making $17.6 million a year. As a matter of fact, compared to football coaches as well, it's extremely low. Baseball pays the players the most, but the coaches the least. I've heard rumors that the MLB assistant model, so player development, so pitching coaches, hitting coaches, is a completely different world than football or basketball. Like a hitting coach has much more sway in an organization as a head manager or a manager in the MLB. Think about it, right? Like what is the manager in the what do they even really do at the end of the day? What do they do?
Walk to the mound when they're pulling the starter.
Yes. I mean like coaching in general in the MLB is much more difficult. I've already laid that out. But what does the actual manager do is the point I'm driving at.
I don't know. That'd actually be like a really interesting conversation to have with someone on the inside. At a point from the outside looking in, you could almost say they're there basically babysitting the other coaches for their respective jobs, whether it's hitting, pitching, base running, first base coach, second or third base coach.
But that's what I'm saying, right? Like there's no loyalty. So like, if a football head coach or a basketball head coach leaves, they're bringing a couple of coaches with them. If a manager leaves, that doesn't happen. You ever notice that?
It does sometimes, but it's much more rare. You're correct. These coaches, these managers, they're good, but they're not as good as the days of Tony La Russa, Joe Torre, Lou Piniella. Those guys were the OGs. Bobby Cox. I mean.
Dusty Baker. John's cringing, throwing up in his mouth again.
Yeah, Dusty Baker. You can have him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a World Series champion.
Only because the talent exceeded his liability as a coach.
And the talent was veteran talent. It wasn't youngsters.
Again, he didn't do shit. None of them do. Right? It's like, okay, so he inherited Barry Bonds. Great. Remember when his grandkid almost got run over by him after he hit a home run? Like, what did he do? He's literally babysitting his grandkid in the fucking night. Like, what do these guys do? I seriously want to know. David Bell needs to retire.
What David Bell is a player's coach, apparently, that has built really strong camaraderie amongst the players, and therefore, being a tight-knit group, they're going to rally behind him, and I get it from that perspective.
I don't know how he still has a job. I mean, listen, you got performance metrics at your job, John. You have performance metrics at yours, Clayton, like – performance metrics matter. He's a sub 45 winner. He's like 0.44 winning percentage all time. Look at like Phil Jackson. He's got like a 0.7 or 0.8 winning record. You know, look at some of these other managers we're talking about in baseball. Like they're all over 500 significantly. David Bell is never going to be on a team beyond the Reds. This is it. This is the line. He's a hometown boy. He's never leaving the Reds. They're going to have to fire him, and no one else is going to pick him up. Actually, that's the bet I'll make you. If and when David Bell retires or leaves the Reds or gets fired, he will never manage another MLB team ever again.
You know who you just described? Marvin Lewis.
Another Cincinnati product.
Again, small market. There's two cities with teams in every sport in the state, and Cleveland's obviously bigger market. So it is what it is.
We got another question for you here, Berman. Something my dad and I have been discussing. We heard it on Shaq's podcast. It's actually an interesting question. Shaq's question was, what's the definition of an MVP? Well, we're going to save that question for the end of the season. But since the MLB All-Star break is right around the corner, I want to know what your definition of an All-Star is.
I go back to my days as a little leaguer, and I really wish that baseball still did this. They used to do this a long time ago, and they don't do it anymore. It should be the same concept as an MVP. The best player on the team goes to the All-Star game, and it's one player per team, and then another player is a reserve per team. And then same thing with pitching. Best five pitchers in the NL, best five pitchers in the AL.
Okay, but how do you determine who's the best?
ERA, WHIP, combination of several key metrics. It's very...
Those stats.
Yeah, statistics.
As compared to what they do nowadays, which is essentially just a popularity contest, and you're allowed to vote as many times as you would like. So if you have a bigger fan base, you're going to get more votes.
Yeah, it's Kim Kardashian is what it is.
So we got to wrap this up, Sparky. What else?
I think that's it. We got any lightning round questions that involve one answer?
No, we know that Berman is not a lightning round kind of guy.
With questions?
No, with short and sweet answers.
Correct.
You got sweet answers, but they're never short.
Correct.
But we love you.
Okay, so give me your – we'll do NBA, MLB, NFL predictions for MVP this year. Just give me a name and that's it.
Tatum, NBA. I'm going to go with Allen, NFL, because I think that this is their year. Depending on how the Dodgers shake out Ohtani, because I think he's going to go on a tear after the break, and I think they're going to be a serious World Series contender this year. Those are my three.
All right, what you got, Big Papa?
I'm going with Tatum, Judge, and this is their year to do it, Joe Burrow.
God, those are the three I was gonna pick. Now I gotta pick something different.
It was either Allen or Burrow.
I'll change it up. Tatum, I'm gonna throw a wild card on you. Tatum, Juan Soto for MLB, and then the NFL. Screw it. I'm just going to be different than you guys. One last rodeo, one last ride. Aaron Rodgers.
Bullshit.
I just said I'm going to be different.
All right, on that note. Two-seamer. Let's go.
All right,
guys. Catch you on the backside of Mexico, baby.
Yeah, see if you can get sunburned to burn that tattoo off your back for you.
Oh, no, we bought these like little covers that go over it. We're protecting the lion at all costs. I might even get one down there, man. Who knows? We'll see.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We had a lot of fun with the ever colorful Kevin Berman. Next week, we will be joined by Matt, our good friend of Industry Ales Brew Pub in Chicago. We recorded this one in Chicago at the pub. It is a gorgeous place, ladies and gentlemen. We talk a little bit about the life of owning a pub and restaurant such as Industry Ales. It is a great episode. Y'all are going to enjoy it. Until then, whatever, whatever.